Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. We're gonna save the world tonight. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. Well, we've got an exciting show for you today. I hope you're enjoying the half-term season that's about at the moment. We've had our kids off this week, which has been lovely. So I hope you've been enjoying being in the outdoors and, well, doing what you can. So, as you know, we always start the show off with a bit of a news piece. This is a story that featured on My Green Pod on the 24th of May. The title was Eat It Up Fund. So it's food related, not too dissimilar to our guest we had last week and definitely connected to the guest that we have this week. So let me just tell you about this article. So Hubbub, which is an organization online, I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute, but they're launching, or have launched, should I say, a fund with investment for innovators ready to tackle food waste. Now, if you were listening last week, and if you didn't get a chance to, do go back to that show. Food waste is one of the biggest issues on the planet in terms of its carbon emissions in making food, the delivery, and then chucking it away. It's so carbon intensive if we're not even going to have eaten that food. So it hasn't even lived its purpose. So food waste is a big issue, as we know. Now, following the success of its first year, environmental charity Hubbub has announced its Eat It Up Fund. And it's now open for the 24 applications. Now, it launched in 2023. The fund is aimed at innovators with creative solutions to tackle food waste. And as you know, we talked about Oleo last week. The fund is looking for six projects that will each be awarded with £60,000 to develop their ideas over a 12-month period. Now, the latest figures from RAP, they are the charitable organisation that monitors food waste, show that 25 to 30% of food produced globally is lost or wasted, contributing to 8 to 10% of total man-made greenhouse gases. So it's a big issue. In fact, the figure that we had last week, an average family of four would waste approximately £1,000 worth of food in a year. £1,000. I mean, that's astronomical. So in the UK, 10.7 million tonnes of food are wasted each year by UK households, food service, food manufacturers, retailers, and of course, farming. So of course, it's not always us as individuals, it's the institutions and the retailers and the restaurants, hotels, etc. The Eat It Up Fund is aimed at innovators with creative solutions to tackle edible food waste. And Hubbub is looking for applications that address pre-farm gate waste, prevent food from being wasted at the manufacturing processing stage, minimizing food waste from retailers, and to reduce or prevent food waste in communities or at home. So applicants must have projects that have been tested and are ready to scale up, or that are in the earlier stages of planning with a concept ready to test. So if you know anybody that's in this space, and I'm sure many of us will, then get in contact with them, tell them to head over to mygreenpod.com, look at the article, and we can obviously get more people to develop themselves for this potential grant. So it's the Eat It Up Fund. It's supported by Hubbub. It's actually, I just looked here, Starbucks have actually underwritten it, but they're giving 5 pence for every cup charge towards this initiative. So that must be how they're raising the money. So there we go. Go and have a look at that. Inspire your friends and anybody you know out there that's tackling this issue and see if we can get them to scale up. So that brings me nicely to today's guest. Not quite in the kind of food waste area, but if you go to the other end of the food that we buy to eat and enjoy, our guest today is one of the leading experts in this particular area. I'll tell you who it is. It's Paul Hargreaves, who is the CEO of Cotswold Fair and Flourish. His company was one of the first to certify as a B Corp in the UK in 2015. Well, we didn't even know B Corp was going then. Cotswold Fair is a wholesaler of specialty food and drink, supplying 2,000 retailers across the UK, and Flourish is an 8,000 square foot food hall, restaurant, and home and lifestyle store. Now, as well as running two award-winning businesses, Paul speaks at events for other business leaders about sustainability. He's written two great books, Forces for Good and The Fourth Bottom Line. Paul Hargreaves, welcome to Lean Into Clean.
Lovely to be here, Jarvis. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you. You know what? Hearing your bio, is there anything that you think, oh, I wish I'd put that on there? Anything missing that you think would be important?
Oh, goodness. Yes, loads, 'cause but you only asked for a few words, so
Great.
I have got much longer versions
Good. Give us
that
the other bits then that you think are important
have
people can get to know about you.
goodness. So I was in the charity sector for I think 10 to 12 years before I came to business, which I think is quite important because that kind of
Yeah.
formed to a large degree how we run our business.
What charity, what sector of charity was it?
Well, we were working in Southeast London. This is a long time ago. I'm quite old now, Jarvis. So this
I know the
was
feeling, Paul. I know the feeling.
this was the kind of late 80s, early, and then most of the 90s. And if you remember, those kind of areas were massively deprived
Yeah.
during the Thatcher era. Let's not get too political, but no investment had gone into those kind of areas. So we were dealing with all sorts of massive social issues, drug addiction, children out on the streets, youth with nothing to do, getting into trouble, loads and loads of crime. So if I think I worked out once, I'd probably spent about 100 hours of my life in Belmarsh Prison,
Oh, wow.
not as
Going
a
in.
prisoner,
No,
by the
but
way.
going in and
No,
working with people.
and every time I went in, I would see my neighbours, who would be shouting to me through the
Yeah.
grills of the
Wow.
from their cells.
Yeah.
Hello,
Yeah.
Paul. So yeah, I mean, I could see how bad things were for many people. So when we went, say we, it was I at the time started the business. I even in those early days, before I knew anything really, I always wanted to start a business that was somehow making the world better. And we initially did it through having people working for us who. One of whom was a recovering drug addict, one was a recovering alcoholic, and one was someone who just came out of prison. So yeah,
Wow.
that was the kind of DNA of the business, if you like.
That's amazing actually to have that level of, I guess, heartfelt, inclusive, caring. Everybody talks about purpose now, and everybody talks about, values and, and businesses. And we know, actually a lot of mainstream businesses only really care about the bottom line and not really much else. So what kind of made you how did that start? Why did you want to focus on trying to help, I guess awful situations? I mean, I grew up in the 80s. I know what it was like. It was racist. It was horrible.
So I was pretty aware when I was growing up that I was from quite a privileged background. Both my parents were doctors. I got a free place, but I went to a fee-paying school in Manchester, quite a well-known one. And then where we lived in South Manchester was on the edge of, at the time, it was the largest council estate in Europe, I believe, Wythenshawe. And so I was always very aware because as soon as we left the house, we were driving through an area with, considerably less wealth than where I lived. I don't really know, but I think injustice has been a big driver for me all my life. I mean, I didn't know that at the time, but it's kind of looking back on my life, it's that I was always really keen for things to be fair, and it was very clear where I grew up, things were very unfair for many people. So I've made a mess of it on many occasions, but I've spent a lot of my life trying to make things fairer for people through
Yeah, that's
technology.
great. I think we can all relate to that. Certainly those that have been lived, been born into privileged families, but born into, less privileged families. And I think we can certainly relate to that. No, thank you. Just gives a little bit of context. So let's just move on very quickly. Would you just explain to everybody that's listening what is Cotswold Fair, number one? And also, I did ask you whether there were any other bits that you wanted to add that were missing from that bio. So let's do that first. Anything else that you think you'd like to add?
Well, we've won loads and loads of awards, particularly in recent years, which is really interesting. Because then we've won them in years where we always that haven't always had a great financial performance. So more and more, I think those people, whoever they are, that are judging these awards are looking not just for financial success, but looking for how much businesses are making a difference in the world.
Yeah,
So
that's good to know.
on my
That's
longer bio, there's a long list of awards that we've run.
yeah, great. So Cotswolds Fair, what makes it an award-winning business?
So we basically consolidate. So we do, our suppliers are generally artisan producers, some very, very small, some slightly bigger, and they are making good food in traditional ways. About 15% of that's organic, about another 10% fair trade. But all of it, all the rest is no preservatives, no additives, good, clean food. And generally, they're great at making it, but not so good at getting it to the end consumer. And so that's what we do. We're the kind of company in the middle, having a big warehouse full of, I think, about 140,000 cases of products, and we deliver out to lots of retailers across the UK, mainly independents, so farm shops, food halls, garden centres, delis, convenience stores, a lot of community stores these days, actually, a lot of village shops. So yeah, we're taking all those nice products and making them more available to the British public.
Nice. Well, thank you for doing that. I mean, it's not somewhere you can shop all the time because, of course, it tends to be a bit more expensive than your average supermarkets or etc. But certainly, when you want better quality, they're the best places to go. The farm shops and the kind of specialty food
Yes.
store. How did you get into
Purely by accident, if I'm
that?
honest.
You fell into a wholesale business.
Yeah, so I was the funding for the charity work had largely dried up. My in-laws at the time were making homemade meringues, and I thought, well, I'll tell you what, they're in the Cotswolds. I could sell these meringues to some shops in London. And that's what I did. Put load in the car, brought them back, started flogging them to delis in London, and then eventually farm shops around the edge of London. Only really to earn a bit of extra money to run the car, pay the phone bills. Yeah, didn't intend it to be a business at all. The turning point was once came back from holiday. And hadn't really planned for the holiday. And do you remember those very old-fashioned answering machines that actually had a physical tape in the machine?
Yes, I do.
Came back.
I'm that old as well.
Yeah, and the tape was full of messages from customers saying, "Here's my order," and then a bit later on, "Where's that order I placed a week ago?" So at that point, I thought, "Well, can't carry on like this. Either need to stop or do it properly,
Or
basically,"
scale, yeah.
and that's what we did.
So when was
And
this? When was this roughly? What's it?
99, it was exactly
99.
when that decision was made. It would be prior to that. It was a hobby business, as we kind of properly started, if you like, in 1999,
And then
25 years
presumably
ago.
you had a
That's
network then of outlets, and then you started
yeah,
building in
only
more
a
product.
yeah, only really. Probably a handful, I don't know, 30, 35 shops, mainly in London or Kent or Surrey at the time.
Wowee. And look where you are today. I mean,
Yeah.
we will get to that, but it's nice for people to hear about the journey.
Yeah. I mean, it was a
And
happy accident in many ways that a lot of the kind of specialty food sector was tiny in
yeah.
those days. So it's what, as with many businesses, actually, just a case of being in the right place at the right time. And we've kind of grown with the industry
Yeah,
over those
nice,
years.
nice. Oh, well done. And when was the point in the business that you kind of, sought out, because you're very ethical in the way that you do things. You seem to have, from me knowing you, and certainly we've talked on numerous occasions about things. You just seem to have a really quite a wholesome, no pun intended, a wholehearted and a wholesome outlook on your business philosophy. And yes, it's you're a multi-million pound business. You've obviously got a lot of clients, a lot of products, but you do seem to be really underwritten with really good values. And when did you notice in business that not everybody was operating like you, and you wanted to do something about it? Because you've become a business leader, you've become a force for good.
Well, as I said, it was in there right at the beginning. I started the business in 99 with a business partner who was absolutely aligned on all that stuff, and we ran it very much like that for a couple of years. He left because we weren't making any money, and he'd had enough of the stress. He left after a couple of years, which kind of left me holding the baby. And I'll be completely frank with you, I just got absorbed with the pressures of the business, fell away probably from some of that original purpose. And it was only really about 10 years later when we were, financially were more successful and we had money that we could put into sustainable projects that we started to come back to it. But yeah, I guess I always thought that the business wasn't like this. And it was only really when we discovered the B Corp movement that I thought, oh, great, there are actually other businesses that run the business as a force for good. And that was a very significant moment because realized we weren't on our own, I guess.
So that was 2015, right? When you well, certainly when you became a
I
B
think
Corp.
I heard about B Corp in 2014, but yeah,
Yeah.
we certified first and were part of the original cohort in 2015.
Yeah, great. Because actually, was it originally, I think Patagonia, or certainly something to do with Patagonia was involved in B Corp.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the US it started in about 06,
Right.
but until I think the UK was the first official community outside of the US, and that took quite a few years to get there.
And I want to talk more about the B Corp because it's become such a popular movement. I think that's the best way to describe it. And we are going to cut to a commercial break in a minute, but just before we do that, a B Corp means a better business, right? A better corporation. That's kind of what the B stands for, isn't it?
No, I don't think it doesn't really stand for anything. It's basically plan A hasn't worked,
So
plan
this is
B,
B plan.
yeah, people think it stands for benefit corporation, which it doesn't. That is a legal entity in the US, but it's not what the B stands for, but
So it's
it's
kind of plan B.
basically business hasn't worked. We need a plan B. This is it.
Okay, good. So on that note, we're going to cut to a commercial break. We'll come back and we'll just talk about why you went for a B Corp, what the process was. Everybody will know about it now because it's on packaging left, right, and center of the sustainable product. Certainly, the listeners that will be listening to us will definitely understand what B Corp is, but we'll talk about it in more detail. It's back in a minute, Paul. Don't go away.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith, UK Health Radio. I'm here with Paul Hargreaves, CEO of Cotswolds Fair. We're just getting into Cotswolds Fair is a specialty foods wholesaling distribution network, farm shops and your delicatessens and loads of cool places where you buy those specialty foods. Probably will have been delivered there, supplied by Paul's organization. We're just talking about B Corp. Now, most of us know what B Corp is. Paul, you were one of the first businesses in the UK to get, or were you the first to
No.
get B Corp status? Not quite, but one of.
Not the first. No, I think Cook were
Oh,
possibly
Cook, yes.
second. They were, I think they were, might have been second. I honestly don't know, but it
Yeah.
was, I know the founder of Cook, Ed, and he was the one that first talked to me about B Corp, which
Nice.
thought it sounded a bit American at the time and probably still does. But when
Yeah.
I digged into it, as I said earlier, it was like, this is everything business should be about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And isn't. So yes, it was kind of a bit of a cliche, but it was like coming home at last in the business
What
world.
are those things that you think business should be about? What are those things that really struck you and said, yes, this is it?
Well, I think I think it's important that it's mainly social and environmental sustainability, and the two have to come together. So the actual assessment is broken into five areas: governance, community, how you treat your the local community you're in, how you treat your workers, how you treat the planet, and how you treat your customers. And you get a score, a huge assessment, probably 250 questions for a business our size. And you're not saying you're perfect. We're a long way from that. But if you're over a certain amount in terms of how your business is impacting the world for good, then you can become a B Corp.
It's a really, I mean, there's thousands and thousands of businesses now that are B Corp,
Yeah, I
aren't
think
they?
it's globally 8,000. UK is now over 2,000.
Yeah, which is amazing, because I like you, I do remember when it first came over into the UK, because obviously you knew about it being in the space that we are. So yeah, it's grown very quickly. I mean, it's become, anybody that's in, I guess, in sustainability, which again is a bit of a broad church sweeping statement, they tend to get their businesses registered under the B Corp, up, what is it, governance, isn't it? It's a thing that you change in your articles, right? You're actually committing to.
Yeah, I mean, particularly in the food and drink space, which is obviously my area, there's almost these days startups that start in that space almost feel they have to be one now,
Yes.
which isn't the same in other sectors than
Now, I think that was my point. And haven't you managed to get a huge amount of suppliers that you deal with and get them, did you support them in getting registered, or just inspire them to, or tell them they had
Yes.
to?
So we can't take credit for all of them. I think, in just to give you an idea of the growth, and this kind of mirrors the whole movement growth, I think start of COVID, March 2020, we had six B Corp suppliers, and now we've got 83.
Wow.
And some of them we can't take any credit for at all, but many we can.
Yeah.
Either inspired, we did for about a year and a half run a course to help our suppliers understand what B Corp was, and quite a few of them have certified since then. But it's really just mirroring the changes in the business community, really. But we Cook, Ella's Kitchen are all kind of fairly early B Corps. We're all being pretty evangelistic about it, and
Yeah.
we want our supply chains to be as clean as possible. Hence,
No, that's great. That's great. Thank you. So let's just move on to well, there's another part of the business, isn't there? That's called Flourish, which is what is that?
So Flourish is a food, we call it a food hall and kitchen. So after supplying places like that for many years, in 2021, we thought we'd start our own.
Yay.
Taking basically stealing all the good ideas that we've seen in other
Were
retailers and
you in a great position? You're
putting them
seeing
in
what's
one building.
selling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, I don't think I've ever had a creative idea in my life, but I'm quite good at nicking ideas from other people. So,
Well, you know what? I don't think there's many people that can claim a complete creative idea.
Started in 2021, just at the end of the last lockdown, actually. So it's an interesting time to start. And it's a kind of thriving retail and food service business. And we're doing we're starting another one actually this summer. So there'll be
So
two.
the first one is where?
It's ha exactly halfway between Bath and Bristol on the
Oh,
A4.
nice.
So
Nice
yeah,
area.
good area. Yeah,
And
yeah.
the second one's going to be, or can't you say yet?
It's no, well, nothing's actually signed yet, but it's definitely going ahead. It's kind of between Bath and Frome, so it's kind of southeast of Bath.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay, brilliant. Yeah, I know the both areas very well. Can I ask you, how messed up do you think the food industry is from your perspective right now in terms of, this crisis that we've got, the food issues that we've got, the organic nature, the regenerative farming, the whole thing, ultra processed foods, etc. What would be your kind of overview being a in that area?
Well, yeah, I mean, at our end of the market, which, as you say, is the premium end stuff, generally does cost more. Most of our producers, they're doing it because they love good food. So, and which is why a lot of them have become B Corp, because they're not. I don't think many specialty food producers have ever been in it just for the money. There isn't a
Yeah.
lot of money.
No.
So their heart's been in the right place, as it were. But generally, the food and industry, food and drink industry is completely messed up.
Yeah.
Largely because large corporates run a lot of it, and have spent millions of pounds lobbying government so regulations don't change, so they can continue giving our populations rubbish to put in their mouths. Seems like
Yeah.
not too fine a point on it. So yeah.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because specialty foods and organic foods, and I think there's going to be this new regenerative farming goods thing that's happening at the moment. They do tend to be, as you say, more expensive because it's better quality. There's, that's not mass produced,
Yep.
etc. I remember this classic line that Vivienne Westwood came up with. She used to talk about encouraging people to go organic. And people would say, well, it's expensive, and she'd say, well, we'll just eat less. And I know that's quite a fickle thing to say, but actually that's the point, isn't it? If you buy better quality, you probably do need less, and therefore it might be worth spending a bit extra for something that's going to
Yeah.
do you more good than harm. And I
Yes.
think that I would certainly agree with that, but of course I'm in a privileged situation where we can afford to spend a bit more on food and organic, but it's not the case for everybody. How do you go about democratizing? Like you've got, I know you've got big plans and big visions, but how do you make good food available to everybody? Is it possible?
Well, with our current social structure, yeah, you can make it available to everyone, but that's why you absolutely have to look at the social issues as well as the environmental side, because most of our population at the moment can't afford good food to eat. So we're in a vicious circle, aren't we? To do things well does cost more money, even with the increase in minimum wage recently. It's not enough to live on for many people. So we're absolutely in a catch-22 here. It's why I think you can't ever look at environmental sustainability without also looking at the social side
Yeah,
as well.
I agree. I agree. And it's not just in our country, it's
No.
social aspects is
Yeah.
right across the planet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Particularly those
Although,
poor
yes, although
countries.
that said, I mean, as you know, I go to Africa quite a lot, and they have very, very little there. They probably eat a lot better and a lot more healthier than we do here
Yeah.
with virtually nothing.
Without all that ultra processed
Yeah, exactly.
sugars, white,
Yep.
white flours, etc.,
Yeah,
etc.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
no, it's very true. Okay, well, let's talk about if I'd like to go on to your books because I think, Forces for Good is clearly, that's a title I understand. The fourth bottom line, we might have to get into that into a bit more detail. But before we do that, Paul, I always ask all of my guests just to give us a couple of songs that would be soundtracks to the climate crisis, or certainly to the way that you choose to live in the world. You've got two great songs. We're gonna play the first one. So, what song have you chosen, and who's it by? And then afterwards, we'll just talk about why you chose that song.
Yeah, well, that absolutely plays into the question you just asked, which I'll wait till after the song. But so when you're listening to this, you won't necessarily think this has anything to do with anything, but I will explain afterwards. So the
Great.
first song is by Stan Walker, and it's called Give.
Here we go. This is Give by Stan Walker. Back in a second. What a brilliant record. I love it. I don't think I've ever heard that, and I absolutely love it. Well, why did you choose that song?
So I was sitting in a Airbnb in Sydney, an area called Woolloomooloo, which isn't easy to say, near Sydney Harbour, and the record company that I think it's Sony, the label were putting together an event, and Stan Walker was actually there rehearsing just before we left this Airbnb. And now I'd written Forces for Good, which is all about me being passionate about changing the world, early days of our journey on that, and brought in stories from other early B Corp businesses about how they could make a big difference in the world. So that book was out by then, I think. And I had a moment when I was listening to Stan Walker singing that song, which is probably more about a romantic relationship. And the line, "How are you going to change the world if you can't change yourself?" Phew, I'm going to get emotional here. Really spoke to me. And I thought, well, we can't do this unless we ourselves are changing. And that is what led to writing another book, basically about if you want to P, people, planet, profit, the triple bottom line, then I might call the fourth bottom line is the personal change we all need to go through if we are actually going to be effective in changing the world. So that was that.
Magical, magical. What was the emotion that came up then? What was it? What bubbled in you?
The kind of it started while I was writing the Forces for Good, actually. I kind of realized towards the end of that book that this is a load of hot air unless we're prepared to become more compassionate people. I think, music obviously evokes the emotions, doesn't it, in a way that words necessarily don't. So yeah, I just couldn't get the line out of my head for
It is
days
a powerful
afterwards.
line.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you're getting somewhere? Do you feel like you're achieving what you'd set out to achieve? How do you feel
Yeah.
about it?
I definitely know I've changed as a human being in the last 5 years. Yeah, a lot, I think, but ask other people. Rather than just seeing the world's problems as problems and being annoyed about it, I much more now get upset about it and do get emotional and probably are in a better. I mean, look, we've all got a long way to go on this, but I think I probably do reach out with more compassion than I used to, and that impacts the way you run your businesses, doesn't it?
It does indeed. It does indeed. No, thank you for being raw. I genuinely appreciate it. It's making me kind of, the hair stand up. Just the level of honesty that you have spoken about and allowed us to go there with you. So thank you for that. We're going to go to another commercial break. You can have a time to gather yourself, Paul. And we'll come back to the fourth bottom line book, your second book next, and you can give us a bit of an insight to that. But thank you for writing Forces for Good, because clearly, you got the message and then you did something about it. And hats off to you for doing that. It's amazing. So commercial break, we'll see you back in a moment. We'll talk about Paul's second book and whether there's any more in the pipeline.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith, the show that talks about the things that we don't really talk about enough, which is, the health of our planet, the health of our environment, the health of nature, how we relate with the world. I'm here with Paul Hargreaves, the CEO of Cotswold Fair and the brand Farm Shop Flourish. We're just talking about his second book. We talked about Forces for Good, which you've very beautifully told us about your inspiration for that. So just tell me about the fourth bottom line. What's that one about?
Well, I wrote the fourth bottom line during the first lockdown, actually, of COVID, because it was,
2020.
in about 3 months, and it was very, very obvious at the start of COVID that there were some leaders of businesses that were behaving well and compassionately, and many others were not. And I just started thinking about leadership and, the compassion that we've talked about already, and how, as leaders, we can be better, basically, and be those people who are compassionate, not just for other people, but also the planet. So I wrote down a list of 50 leadership characteristics, and put a thing out on LinkedIn asking for any more, and pretty much I seem to have captured most of them. And it was all the stuff that leaders should be doing and quite often haven't over the years. We've had a very male, masculine, let's say, style of leadership, and what comes to people's minds when they think of leadership is more the masculine attributes, and some of the beautiful feminine characteristics haven't really been worked on by leaders. So yes, it was an attempt really to start that personal change we've already talked about in the leaders of our businesses in the 21st century.
Nice. And that was it well received?
Yeah, I mean, what I realized actually from writing the first book was how few people actually read these days. Not many people do. So the idea is it's broken down to 50 chapters for over 50 days. So there's like 3 or 4 pages, there's a couple of quotes, a couple of stories, and then 3 action points to put into action that day. So the idea is it's really a book for people that don't read a lot. So everyone can manage 3 or 4 pages a day, can't they?
Oh, nice. Isn't that, I know it's awful, isn't it, that you have to think about books for this kind of short-term audience these days. You're
Yeah.
right. I mean, obviously, the slightly older generations are reading books, students are reading books because it's knowledge for education, but the sound bites of information that we're so used to getting now, whether it be quick social media, quick podcast, blah 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 blah, whatever. Oh, good. I'm glad you broke it down. So anybody that's interested in, well, just learning more about how to be better in business, the forces for good
Yeah.
and the fourth bottom line, presumably they're available on,
Yeah.
shopping platforms
I
online.
normally say available on all good bookshops and also available on Amazon.
Exactly. Well, Amazon
Yeah.
was originally a book platform, wasn't it?
Mm.
So are there any more books in the pipeline?
There's a question. Probably at some point. I don't.
You're
I
not
think with
thinking about
both.
it
Well,
yet.
no, with both those books, I was kind of pregnant with them for a while before I delivered them, as it were. So nothing's bubbling right now. I have a feeling the next one might be a collaboration with at least one other person. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah.
Okay, nice. It's interesting you talk about leadership because what strikes me in what you said, and I do love it, and absolutely notice what you're saying. The old, I don't know what you want to call it, the old style of leadership, or even the current style of leadership that's in play now, i.e., politicians, big business leaders, etc., predominantly male. It strikes me, I don't know if you agree with this or not, that people that get into that position have normally got quite big egos, definitely big personalities, and in some way, shape, or form, want to be seen as something, as a leader. And whereas the style of leadership that you're talking about, often it's not about, look at me, aren't I great? I'm changing the world. It's more about, let's just get stuff done and let's get on and do it. And it's quite hard to break through that kind of wanting to be seen doing something, isn't it? It's a different approach to leadership.
Yeah, well, servant leadership, I would call that, and that's exactly what leadership should be. And I use Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi quite a bit in the book as role models of that, because you're right, it's the exact opposite is what people in many leaderships are like. They're not there to serve at all, they're there for themselves, many of them. Imagine if all our politicians were really, I mean, some of them do, to be fair, but just imagine if they were truly there to serve people and not there for their own careers.
I mean, the whole system, is definitely needs re-looking at, needs a re-evaluation. It's funny you say Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela. I was literally just about to say to you, You are that classic Gandhian statement, be the change you want to see in the world. And that's exactly what you are doing. I live by that mantra as to the best of my ability as well. And actually, I think it's the most powerful thing to do, to be the example of what you envisage, how you want the world to be. And you will actually either attract people to you or inspire people to you, or people will learn from you. So thank you for being that individual, being the change. It's brilliant. We're going to play your second song. We are coming relatively close to the end of the show. We've probably got about 6 minutes or so, but let's play your next song and then we'll come back for a couple of minutes and just get any final sound bites from you. So what's the second song you've chosen?
Well, it's a very well-known one, Africa by Toto.
Ah, great record. This is Africa by Toto. We'll see you back shortly. Ah, such a great record. Thanks for bringing that song, Paul. Why did you choose that?
Well, I've spent a lot of time in Africa. We got projects over there that the company supported since 2011, I think. We've raised probably £250,000 to help over there, taking teams there. And I've always, I mean, back to the injustice thing again, I've always thought it's incredibly unfair that a continent that's probably created the least in terms of carbon emissions during their history is suffering the most now. So I started a farm out there in 2012, which has basically had to be completely abandoned due to the extremes of weather they now have. They've just had huge flooding over there. So yes, Africa is a lovely place and we need to treat it with a lot more respect.
Yeah, nice. Thank you for that. And yeah, absolutely agree. Well, we're coming close to the end of the show. We got a few minutes. Just quickly on the Africa thing, because I think it's important just to highlight that. So you invested in a farm, presumably growing or raising livestock or growing.
Cat dairy and tomatoes were the main two crops.
And then were they coming back through your distribution channels?
No, it was
No.
purely to so the project there is a primary school, secondary school, orphanage.
Got
So
it.
we were trying to help them be more rely less on money coming from the UK and more help them to be more self-sustainable. We did
Sustainable.
get it up to about a third of the income at one point through the farm, but sadly it's all fallen away again.
Oh, wow. That was such a, yeah. And that just shows you, doesn't it? We take for granted so much of the luxuries, if you like, that we have in England and Western territories. And yet these global South countries are absolutely crucified by climate crisis. What if you had a magic wand, classic question, if you were a leader and, everyone was listening to you, you'd reach that level of influence where people go, yep, if Paul says it, I'm going to do it. What would you share? What would you want people to be inspired by you?
Goodness. Well, really, just if whatever you do, whether you're working for another business or whether you're running your own business, you can probably make more of a difference than you think you can. And I think that the temptation is to, well, we're a long way away. We can't really do much. We can all do something. And we need to do a lot more, but there's always something we can do tomorrow. Something else bigger we can do next month, and something even bigger we can do next year. So it's the old kind of cliche of don't let perfection get in the way of progress.
And you're a classic example of that. You've been inspired and you've gone off and done something about it with the skill set that you've got. So thank you very much, Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure. So for those of you interested in some good food, Cotswold Fair, if you're in the business, Cotswold Fair is the place that could supply you. If you're in the area of Bath and Bristol, go to Flourish. Go and have a look at what Paul's up to, because I do know people that have been, and they say you can feel the difference in the environment, hand on heart. So go and check it out if you're in the air. Paul, thank you so much. I know you're a busy guy, so I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Loved it.
Great. So we're going to end the show as we always do by playing the track Save the World by yours truly. Every play of this record, 100% of the money raised through plays, downloads, playlists, is donated to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures Mapper. That's the most affected people and areas, some of whom we've been speaking about today. So get it on your playlist, play it while you're asleep. This is Save the World by Jarvis Smith featuring Rita Mora. Thanks, guys. I'll see you next week.